Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. Now, here's your host, CJ.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fired Up with CJ show on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. I am CJ Liu, and today we have Dr. Lonnie Leary, the author of No One Has to Die Alone. And we're going to talk about how you can create a family support team in managing and handling care giving to your loved ones. So welcome back, Lonnie.
Thank you, CJ.
So one of the things, I've had so many girlfriends, I'm in my 50s, and my girlfriends are in the stage where they're taking care of their parents who, you know, either have Alzheimer's or, you know, chronically ill. And one of the things that they complain about is how it's really hard for them to get other people enrolled, other family members enrolled in the care of their loved ones or passing parent. What's happening emotionally to the caregivers or family members when they hear about a family member approaching their death?
Right, that's a good question. So when we look at the family dynamics, your loved one, your parent, your mother or your father, has just told you that they are dying or declining, and the family members don't see themselves necessarily as caregivers. Oftentimes there's one person in the family that is non-verbally designated as such, but the other people might step back. And I believe that that is because fundamentally, they may not say it, but they believe the thought, I cannot cope, or I cannot make a difference. And my example of that is in my family, when my father was had this terminal diagnosis, one of the family members said, well, Dad's going to die anyway. I can't make a difference. And I kind of set out all the different ways that we, that all of us can kind of ante up or contribute. We want to participate. I believe people will participate if they know how. So people need to learn the skills and feel that they are competent. But they can be competent in ways that they are already competent if we know different ways that will make a difference in this end-stage journey. So I kind of, my book lists a lot of different roles that family members can participate in. And they can be up-close and personal roles. For instance, I was very comfortable touching my father, so I took care of his physical needs and did a lot of massage with him to soothe his anxieties. Another family member didn't feel comfortable with touch at all, but he was really good on the computer, so he did a lot of the research about this type of cancer. Another family member might feel comfortable taking care of the finances. Another family member who might be in denial, as in, oh, Dad's going to get better. Dad's going to get better.
Yeah, what are you worrying about anyways? You're just making a mountain over a molehill. I've heard of that, too.
So I'm not going to necessarily try to convince that person, because that's going to get out of their comfort level, and then they may not participate at all. But I might ask that family member who is in denial, would you be willing to take Dad to the doctor? That might be too personal. So I might ask him, would you be willing to pick up the medication? Or would you be willing to answer the phone? But there are so many different roles that people can participate in across the board, depending on their level of comfort, their skill, their competency. So you could have someone who is a facilitator between all the siblings or all the family members communicating, dad just went to the doctor and this was the latest report. And especially if you have family members spread out all over the United States, somebody is good with email and they can be the communicator in that way. That's very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So that here's mm-hmm. the deal. We want to do this because this is our last chance to show love to this person, to show mm-hmm. them that they matter.
Mm-hmm.
And we can follow through with our actions. And mm-hmm. we want to do this because everyone, the dying, the caregivers, the bereaved after the death, will have peace of mind and no regrets.
Mm-hmm.
And they will not, this will not be a train wreck. They will not miss the life they could have had. Everyone, mm-hmm. you see?
Mm-hmm.
We can save ourselves from the grief. We can save ourselves from the nightmare of regret and guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing.
Because we didn't do anything, or we didn't do anything because
exactly.
we didn't know what to do.
Exactly.
The couple other things in your book that I love. So there's a medical advocate who I had no idea. It's like, well, aren't the doctors going to take care of everything? But that doesn't, and from my girlfriend who just has been with two passing loved ones, said, no, you got to be there as a medical
yeah.
advocate. Tell us about that role, because I don't think a lot of us are familiar with it, or even think that we need to take these high-paying
right.
doctors and advocate anything.
Okay, so an example of that is that I was the one who was comfortable speaking with doctors and asking questions. So it was I that took my father to his medical appointments and went into every appointment with my father. And I knew to tape record the conversation so that we could review information, because there's a great deal of information that is shared, and often medical terms. My father, as many are, you know, was 90 and would have been 90, and I knew my father well enough to know that he would not second guess a physician, and he would not even ask questions that sounded like he was being disrespectful. So as a medical advocate, I went with my father and I asked the questions that I knew he would not. I took the notes so that we could review them, so I was sure that my father understood afterward, and then I had the information to pass on to the rest of my family. But as I sat there with my father in the doctor's office, and the doctor said, well, you know, we could try chemotherapy. That was all the information that was shared by the doctor. I asked the questions that my father wouldn't, which was, well, what would my father gain? How much time might my father gain? And the oncologist said, probably 2 weeks. And then I said, and what do you think it would cost him? What might the side effects be? What would the time requirement be, etc.? And the doctor said, well, he would have to come over the hill every day, which would be, you know, at least an hour of travel. We would have to get him in and out of a car in a wheelchair. And here are the side effects. You know, you'd probably be nauseous. You wouldn't feel good, things like that. So then as a medical advocate, I asked my father, Dad, here are the pros. Here are the cons. I will support whatever you want. What would you like? Okay, and then my father made a very clear decision that he did not want to go to the hospital under any circumstance. So I was there making sure that nobody called the ambulance. We enrolled him in hospice care so that he would have services at home and be able to die at home. But again, I made sure that everyone followed his medical wishes, which was not to go in an ambulance and things like that. And then as a medical advocate, I supported his medical decisions when he decided to take the oxygen tube out of his nose that was delivering, you know, life-saving oxygen to him, or actually not life-saving, but life-sustaining. And I didn't fight him on that because I knew his values and his wishes. And it was not my life. It was his. And I was there to support him being the author of his life and his death.
Beautiful. we are going to be right back. That is a beautiful way of thinking about it, because as you're saying, I mean, part of what they really, what you fear is the loss of control. So allowing them to write the first, you know, the last chapter of their life is just a beautiful gift that you gave your dad.
Thank you.
So thank you. We have Dr. Lonnie Leary, author of No One Has to Die Alone. To find out more about Lonnie's workshops that are happening in the Northwest in the next, it seems like next 2 weeks, go to drlanileery.com, drlanileery.com. And also go to Psychology Today, where she has a blog where she posts on posts information on this content. And if you want to create a happier you and happier planet, make sure to check out our shows on www.firedupwithcj.com. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, the magical Sarah McLachlan.